Racer Radio on AM 1170 The Answer is sponsored by Love Radio Network.
Power on. Power on.
It's time to take your place on the starting grid and get ready for Racer Radio. Your host, Dave Stahl, about to take you for a white-knuckled lap around the motorsports industry, covering everything from top-notch national drivers and crew chiefs right down to your local kid racers and racetracks. Watch for the apex, because here comes Racer Radio with Dave Stahl.
Hey folks, welcome. This is Racer Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer. This segment is brought to you by San Diego Carburetor and Fuel Injection, 6622 University Avenue in San Diego. Got a carburetor, fuel injection, or a distributor that needs a little bit of love? Stan is the man. Go to sdcarb.com, sdcarb.com. Well, if you're in the motorsports world, you know all about Matt DiBenedetto and his trials and tribulations the last couple of races. I mean, I don't think there's a driver in the NASCAR series that's not pushing for Matt. Lost his ride this year, but he's still putting forth 110%. And I got him on tape. Take a listen.
You've been watching NASCAR. There's a driver, a young driver, that has never, I don't think I've ever seen a driver work as hard. Okay, maybe Dale Earnhardt Sr. Yeah, but this guy's way nicer than Dale. And I love Dale. I got my own shrine and everything. We got Matt DiBenedetto on the line. How you doing, Matt?
It's doing great. How's it going?
We're doing wonderful. We're the only motorsport show here in San Diego, California. But we're surrounded by dirt track. We got a little dirt track. We got a little asphalt. Nothing big, but we're big, big, big fans. So, you know, let's talk about not the last race, but the race before that, where you came in second place with Denny Hamlin. Did I understand the reporters that the car you were driving was a year old and wasn't really up to the, you know, all the standards, let's say, of Hamlin?
You know, so I don't know the exact date or how that you know, exactly when that chassis and everything was from. But so what we do that works out for us at Levine Family Racing is we, we're on, I guess what you call the B program from Joe Gibbs Racing. So we do, our cars are an update or a generation behind. So they're a little bit behind, but it works out where, you know, financially it kind of benefits everybody. And we still get nice race cars, but they're, you know, an update or so behind or a generation back. And then, we have really good people, so they, you know, my crew chief Wheels, and everybody makes the most of them.
Yeah, Wheels, what a great guy. And for folks that may not know, you have to go out and buy a ride. It's not offered to you as yet. You have to find sponsorship. You have to find people that believe in you. And if you started a GoFundMe page, much as I think that's crazy, but it might work.
this is an expensive sport, so... No, I've been lucky that, Bob Levine and his wife Sharon invested a lot into taking me on, a part of this team. And, it's been a great year. It's been cool to build the team up to what it is today. We have a lot of really, really good people on our team. So it's been cool. I wish wish I could stick with the team for a long time to come. But, it's just a business decision. And this is an expensive sport, like you said.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's probably going to be kind of a sweet and sorrow, because if you do get another ride, you're not going to be able to take that team with you. You know, especially Wheels, unless they offer him a deal as well. So it could be, yes, I want to go, but no, I don't want to go.
Man, it's, I've loved working with Wheels, our engineers, our car chief, like all of our guys on our team. We've become like family, and Wheels is so good too. It'll kill me if I, to not be able to work with him. And I'd love to reunite with him at some point, just because he is that good, and we've worked so well together, and it's shown. You know, he's kind of gotten his process at the shop implemented, where the flow of everything is how he wants, and we've the performance has shown. You know, where we have really picked it up and gotten on a roll in the second half of the season with all these top fives, top tens, and, you know, almost winning at Bristol. That's, it's no fluke. It just shows, the hard work of our team building the program up over the course of the year. It took a little bit of time to get, you know, all of us on the same page, but it just shows how good they are.
Right, and I think, you know, you know this better than I do. I mean, you're closer to it, but, you know, with the lack of any owners saying anything, to me, is kind of a good thing. You know, because, I mean, let's face it, they got to, you know, to get you a spot, there's got to be a seat. You know, you can be the greatest driver in the world. If there's no place for you to drive, there's no place for you to drive. So I'm sure what's going on behind the scenes, you know, is fast and furious. We've only got a few more races to go, but I like your attitude. You just go to the race, strap on your helmet, and try to win. That's all that's on your mind right now. And that's what needs to be on your mind. You can't let last week, you know, get you down. I mean, that was just pure adrenaline trying to get to the front. I seen it. I watched it. I get it. Not even worth talking about. Hopefully you got a good night's sleep because you said you weren't going to sleep all week.
Yeah, that was a tough one. Just stinks to have, you know, what I felt like an easy win, kind of thrown out the window there because the car was by far the fastest. And you know, hey, you win and lose as a team, and everything has to work out right. And you know, we just had a mishap on the pit stop there, and that just shows how, I hope that shows how much of a team sport this is. That you know, you rely on every single person around you to you know, win a race, even if you have the dominant race car, it still all has to work your way.
Yeah, and can you believe, I mean, Hamlin, first thing he says after winning Bristol is how heartbroken he was that you didn't win. I mean, that's got to say a lot, you know, for you and your personality and the way you handle yourself on the track, off the track. And, I mean, you know, and same thing God, who won? God, I can't remember the guy that won last Sunday. You know, I can't remember
which track.
The race at the very last lap when you went off track. That was Road America. I don't
know. Christopher Bell. He was down at Road America.
Yeah, that's right. All right. So you're now you've got a ride for the rest of the season.
Yep, so I'll be still, running the 95 all the rest of the year.
All right, good deal. All right, well, you know, I think it's you're just really putting a bright light on NASCAR. You really, really are. There's some drivers there that have got what I call attitude problems, and that's not good when young kids, because one of the things I do, I have a racer radio, and I bring in little kids, and I interview them and get them talking about their sponsors, you know, and teach them how they have to handle themselves. And I got to tell you, the next kid I have in, I'm going to have him watch the Matt DiBenedetto tapes, because you could have been a complete opposite, but you stood tall with all the goofiness that came on the track. And it happens all the time, but, I mean, you really stood tall. And I think young kids could look up to that attitude, even though you were as bummed out as anybody could be.
Yeah, no, it's I try to big part of the sport is being respectful and you know, gaining the respect of the people that you race on track with is big to me. And sometimes drivers can be your best or biggest advocates. You know, I've had drivers like Denny Hamlin that have made impacts on my career and, you know, previous race team that I was with at Go Fast. So that's just the impact that those guys can make. You gain their respect, and they can put in good words for you if you have a chance to, you know, go to a team or whatever. It goes a long way.
So you're racing for Joe Gibbs. After, you know, has he come over and sat down and chatted with you and just told you to just keep doing what you're doing, things will happen?
Coach Gibbs has been, him and his son JD were the reason that I'm in NASCAR in general. So they, you know, they got me into NASCAR, gave me my first opportunity. So I, you know, owe a lot to those guys. But it's been neat. You know, they've noticed how well that we've been running and our performance, and they've congratulated, you know, Wheels and our team, and also come to me. Coach Gibbs, you know, came up to me right after Bristol and multiple races where we've been running up there in the top five, and he's said nothing but great things and good encouragement, and and it's a tough sport and tough business, but I hope it'll all work out and lucky to have gained the respect of, you know, team owners and drivers.
Sure. And, you know, I told you. Now, you're going to Talladega this weekend?
I'm going to Darlington this weekend.
I get it mixed up. Wow, that should be fun, huh? How do you think you'll do there? Are you good on the big tracks?
You know, so this year, the bigger racetracks with the new rules changes, those have been our struggle for sure. We've been the best at the short tracks and the road courses. So with the new aero and rules package where we have the real high downforce and the low horsepower, it kind of took all of our off-throttle time away, so we can't really make as big of a difference at the bigger racetracks. But Darlington could be a little bit of an exception because it's still, you know, worn out enough to where right. We may still have some of that off-throttle time in turns 3 and 4. So it's been that's been a big challenge for us, is at those tracks where you're nearly holding it wide open, it kind of takes away all the things that I, you know, have as a driver to kind of separate me from others and allow us to perform. So we've had to go to work as a team to try and work on those types of racetracks to be better. Cause every time we go to a road course or short track where, you know, you're kind of back to manhandling the car and sliding around a little bit and working on the handling of the car, doing all those old school things, we go run top 5 or top 10 or almost win at Bristol, you know? So these ones are ones that we've had to work on as a team to just try and get some, as much speed in the car as possible.
Right, and that's what it's going to take. So, by the way, so I was just Googling and getting some information on you. Your wife popped up. I can't believe you put that post of her trying to dive in a swimming pool.
Oh, yeah, that was a good while back, but that was funny.
Hey, dude,
yeah.
If you go to Google and put your name in, that's the third thing on the line to click on. And I seen it, and I went, Matt DiBenedetto's wife, why would they put that on there? So I did all my work first, and then I clicked on it. I swear, tell her thank you. I laughed my you-know-what off. That was hilarious.
We like to have fun, and she we pick on her, and she takes it well.
She does. She looks like a real sweetheart. Well, you just tell her to keep practicing. Matt, thank you again for taking time out of the day. We'll air this Sunday. And it has been known that when people call in, and this is the truth, I can give you drivers, like, from all forms of racing. It's, a lot of times they end up winning after talking to me on during the week. So if that works, you have my permission to call me every week till the end of the season.
Perfect. I hope it works out that way. That'd be great. We need to recover from Bristol and get in the playoffs.
Yeah, wouldn't you just flip out if you didn't win this weekend? I know I'll be getting a call next Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Matt. Hey, keep up the good work. You're a class act, and you just really put a bright light on NASCAR, which, you know, I think is a good thing for the young kids coming up. And, you know, as the old saying goes, keep the rubber side down, the shiny side up, my friend.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Hey, welcome back. You're listening. Don't you love that song?
That's the worst bumper.
Well, get rid of it. Put another one in there. I got some more. Hey, this is Racer Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170. The Answer. Boy, I tell you what. Don't you want Matt to get a ride? I want him to get a ride really bad. Hey, this segment is brought to you by El Cajon Ford. They have got a sale going on today and tomorrow. If you're looking for a new Ford, trust me, this is the place to be. The sale is going to be awesome. It's a huge Labor Day sale. Go to 1595 East Main Street in El Cajon or go to ElCajonFord.com for all their needs. Drive by there. They also support Barona Speedway. And that's why we have this segment called the Barona Speedway a Moment. And we got our good buddy Phil Confer on the line. Hey, Phil, how's it going?
Hey, guys, how you doing? Long time no talk.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on board. I know it was a last-minute deal, but we surely do appreciate it. What are you up to? You racing or are you preparing?
A little bit of both. We moved our race shop out of Carlsbad. We got a 3,600 square foot facility that a bunch of us are working together on down in El Cajon now.
Nice. Okay, so you got the whole Dwarf series.
Yeah, we're running. We're gonna have like 7 or 8 Dwarfs running out of here and prepping cars. We're building 2 new cars right now. We got another new car coming in hopefully in the next couple weeks with a surprise driver, a pretty prominent race car driver, and all forms of racing is gonna be coming on board.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun.
So tell the folks a little bit about this division you're talking about.
They're 5/8 scale cars from the 30s and 40s. We run motorcycle motors up to 1250 cc's in them. The cars have to weigh 1,000 pounds without the driver, and man, I tell you what, it's a lot of fun. They're evil little handling cars, and you gotta know what you're doing to drive them, that's for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. And with the motorcycle engines, we're talking what, 1100 1200 cc's?
1250 cc's max. Most guys are running 1000 cc fuel injected motors.
Right. And if they're taken care of, they can pretty much last a season with no maintenance other than oil changes and filters.
Yeah, we adjust the valves twice a year, and I've been running them for about 11 years now, and I'm on my second motor in 11 years. So,
And I bring this up for a reason, because most of the time when you're racing, you're tearing equipment up. But if you're a decent driver and you know your rev limiter and how it works, if you even have one, or at least a tachometer, you can make these cars last and still have all the fun. And I think, you've won a race or two, right?
I've won a couple. We got lucky a couple weeks ago, and we got a win in the class. In our class, Darren Brown has been out there just showing us the way, and I got fortunate to steal one away from him. But he's a great driver. I'll tell you what, that guy there, I've said it before. I've said it on our podcast with Metal Manglers that, you know, when we go to the Nationals, I stop what I'm doing when that guy goes out there on the racetrack, and I go up and watch him learn. It's a learn. That guy can just wheel a race car.
Right. And yeah, you can learn a lot, if nothing else, by following him.
Well, I don't like following him so much because that means I'm finishing second.
I'm talking in practice.
Yeah, in practice. Exactly.
Well, you're racing on the dirt. There is no line per se, because no two cars are set up identical. So, you know, you might want to chase him, but your car may not be set up to do that. So you've got to learn how to read the track, fish the track, and find out what works for you. And I'm sure you call it luck, but I have a funny feeling a lot of it was how you read the track and the circumstances that came about, and you made the decisions you made to get where you were at.
Well, thank you for the compliment, Dave. But yeah, it's the track changes almost every lap. One time you might go in on the bottom and the track's hooked up good, and you figure it's going to work there. And then the next time you go down there and it's just not there. And a lot of guys like to run the way top side. I've been working on that this year, trying to get up off the bottom and run the top side. But you've got to be able to. It's just like desert racing. You got to be able to read the dirt and see what it's doing. And I'm lucky enough that this year here, my crew and I, we've really worked on that with me, and we've been working on the setup pretty hard. We've been working with our shocks and springs, and we've been working with Ryan Diotti at Diotti Racing Innovations up there up north, and he's been a huge part in teaching us and helping us out.
So you've been a bottom feeder for a while, staying on the bottom of the track, and now you're creeping up to the wall. Was it as difficult a transition as you thought, or was it easy?
It was a little bit. At first, it was a little bit difficult coming off of turn 4 and at Verona. It kind of kicks the back end of the car out, and you just got to. I finally got faith that the car would just hold, and I just leave my foot in it, and it holds and straightens out. There's been a couple times I've gone up there and put a little bit of a. I guess you could call it the Verona stripe. I've gotten a Verona stripe a couple times this year, and
sure.
And Neildon, my crew chief, is when I come in, he's like, "Yeah, that one's gonna suck."
Yep, that's gonna suck. Well, I've got a way to get around it. When you go into turn 4, keep your eyes open, and you'll glide right in and you'll glide right out. See, if you close your eyes and wait for that bump, you're gonna hit it. So just keep your eyes open.
Well, that that'll increase my chances of getting out of turn four clean by a factor of 10.
Exactly. So again, going back to the class, folks, you know, if you're interested in racing, and you know, this is not a bad entry level class. I mean, yeah, you can go pure stock and you can do all that, but that's a lot of weight, a lot of car and a lot of parts and a lot of people. These little dwarf cars, I mean, you know, you can get two or three guys or girls together, put a little team together, and for really a minimal amount of money, because there's always a used dwarf out there someplace where somebody's either moved out of the class or moved up. And that's what's neat about Barona. All the race cars kind of stay within the area, so it's not like they go to the wrecking yard and you never see them again. They end up, somebody else picks the car up, somebody else starts driving it. And like we said, no two drivers are the same, so you know, one car could be fast for one person and not so much for another, but there's plenty of cars out there. And the thing I like about your division, Phil, is that if a newbie comes out there, has never done it before, you guys literally hover around them and make sure they know what they're doing. And that's the thing I like.
Yeah, it's a huge family. It's a great family. We sometimes joke around that it's one of the best families out there, the dwarf car community, albeit dysfunctional at times, but it's one of the best. I mean, we're just, if it comes down to it, it's like any real family out there. You know, we might bicker amongst us, but don't let an outsider come in and try and step on us.
Exactly. And nothing reunites you guys more than when a bunch of out-of-towners show up. I mean, you're respectful and you enjoy having them at the track, but you guys kind of bind together when that happens, if I'm not correct.
Yeah, we do. We help each other out, and we even go as far as to help them out.
Sure.
We had our border wars just this recently, and Derek Rossi come down, and man, he watching him drive was just phenomenal. Watch him be patient with that big old. We had a 30 lapper, and man, I got to tell you honestly, watching him, it was just. Watching how he saved tires and just was very conservative working the car through.
Right.
I learned a lot from that guy too. And it was a great race. It was a great race to be in. And it was a great race to watch from where I had probably one of the best seats in the house. I was out there on the track. So that was really good.
And let me guess, you were behind him.
Unfortunately, yes, I was.
Sometimes that's the best seat in the house. I mean, like yeah, you said, yeah. But I'm sure you look at him go into a turn. So you go, okay, I'm going to do that. And it doesn't come out any way, shape, or form the way he did it.
Well, it's funny you say that because my teammate and I, we both run the same chassis car, and we have completely, John Crump Jr. And I have completely different setups on our car. I mean, I'll take his car out and test it. And I'm like, I come in, I'm like, dude, how do you drive this thing? And he'll take mine out and say the same thing. He's like, man, you're nuts.
But
put us on the track side by side, and we can send it off into turn one. You know, it's basically the saying is, stay in the throttle till you see God, then pass him.
There you go.
Side by side.
Well, see, that's why the word show is in your name. Phil, thank you very much. Hey, how do people follow you around? Are you on that silly social media?
Yeah, we have social media. We've got Confer Motorsports and Metal Manglers, and there's a new announcement going to be coming out soon. We're putting some stuff together. I don't know if it's going to happen before the end of the season or not, but next year we have a lot of really really good things to come. So if everybody comes out, checks out the racetrack, and comes out next year, there's going to be a big change in the Confer Motorsports team for me personally, and then the entire group that we've put together. We put about six or seven guys together, and it's just going to be a phenomenal thing.
Sounds like a KUSI segment if I've ever heard one.
All right, well, let me know, and I'll be there.
Send me an email. I'll get you a date right here on FM 96.1 AM 11.7. Thanks, Phil. You're the best. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I've got a driver. He's a young kid. J.D. Wilson, racing up at Paris Auto Speedway, showing the kids how to do it. You're going to really love this interview. Don't go anywhere. This is FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer. All right, folks. Hey, welcome back. You are listening to Racer Radio, FM 96.1. AM 1170, The Answer. This segment is brought to you by Paris Auto Speedway, 18700 Lake Paris Road in Paris, California. Go to parisautospeedway.com. You can see the whole schedule. There's still tons of racing left, but tell you what, you got to get going because there's not too many races going on as we speak. So check them out, parisautospeedway.com. Hey, we got J.D. Wilson on the line. Hey, J.D., how's you doing, buddy?
Well, Dave, I want you to take it easy on me today because I've never done this before.
Is this your first time on radio?
My very first time.
Well, hey, you know, you're never too young or too old to give it a try. And I understand you had a pretty good time last night at Paris Auto Speedway. What were you driving?
Well, it's a car in a race they call it a demo cross. Mm-hmm. But now people want to say demolition derby, and that's not it. Demolition derby, you're trying to destroy the car. And demo cross, we race. It's a 20-lap race on the quarter mile,
mm-hmm.
but they make it very difficult for us. They put obstacles on the track, and they wet the track just before we started, so it's sloppy mud, and then they have boats on the track and things like that. And also, we are encouraged to run into each other, spin each other out, and things like that. So it is a 20-lap race, but it's not demolition derby.
Yeah, it's just kind of like demo carnage, not quite.
Okay.
We'll go with carnage.
There are usually several cars that don't finish the race.
Exactly. Yeah. So what kind of car are you driving?
Well, it started out as an old street stock that I bought for $400. It was a Cheville chassis.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took that Cheville chassis and started working on it and cutting and welding and adding, you know, some metal to it and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's hard to describe what it is right now. It's so ugly. I've never owned anything that's ugly. I'm ashamed to pull it down the freeway.
You need an enclosed trailer.
No, because when you're doing this demolition stuff, you're foolish if you got an enclosed trailer because you might not be able to load your vehicle.
I was gonna say, yeah. Forklift. You can at least in an open trailer, you can get it on with a forklift, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So how long
how
long you been racing?
Oh, I don't know, just a lot of years. I started when I was 33.
So you started late.
Yeah, I did. There's a story with that if you want to hear it.
Sure.
I was from Iowa and a farm boy.
Uh-huh.
And I went to a high school in a small high school in a small town. And there were only 24 boys in my senior class and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And but of the 24, four of us were going to be racers. Now, the first guy, he was the doctor's son, so that was pretty much, you know, he was going to have the money and that sort of stuff. And then the other two, they just started racing right out of high school and that sort of stuff. Now, you know, they kept themselves poor their whole life by spending, you know, everything they could spend on racing, trying to run up front. And they were both reasonably successful, but they kept themselves poor. And I always told myself, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be poor. I'm going to get my career first and then go racing.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
I was an airline pilot as a co-pilot. I was an airline pilot before I bought my first race car and went racing. So that was when I was 33 years old.
Well, at least being an airline pilot, at least you could afford to go racing.
Well, you know, when you're first starting out, it doesn't pay much.
Right.
Because my first car, it was a 56 Chevy two-door, and I bought the car race-ready, and it was prepared by a good guy, former champion, and that sort of stuff. And I bought the car and the trailer for $650. So it didn't need that much, but,
yeah.
But at least that was a street stock, you know, so that was a lower division class.
Well, the old saying is that pilots and racing have the same DNA. Have you found that to be true?
Well, yeah. Before I got into to airplanes and that sort of stuff, you know, I had worked on the farm, and when I was young, my dad, when I was 10 years old, the other boys in the neighborhood were getting bicycles. My dad bought me a tractor and a plow and a cultivator. So I started operating stuff when I was 10 years old.
Sure.
And then later on, after that, I worked different things on construction to where, and every kind of construction I go to, I'd end up running every machine that they had. And then I got in truck driving, and I was, you know, driving different kinds of trucks and all that sort of thing. And so when this one guy one time said, "Hey, I'm going to be an airline pilot," I said, "Wow, how does that work?" And so on and so forth. And he said, "Well, you get a license, and then you get your instructor's license and teach other people how to fly airplanes. And then you get some hours, and then you can get an airline job." And I said, "Well, an airplane's just another machine or whatever.
Sure.
I ought to be able to fly an airplane." And so to answer your question, yeah, I was a good pilot.
Right. Yeah, because when we did the Coronado Speed Festival out here, the way we convinced the base commander, who was a pilot, is we strapped him in a 289 Cobra and took him out on the tarmac and just got his juices flowing. And he came back, he was grinning like from ear to ear. And the Speed Festival was there for quite a few years. And it's because of enthusiasm and getting enthusiasts to get behind it. So have you always raced on the dirt?
Yeah, I raced one race. They had an open comp. This was at Orange Show.
Mm-hmm.
And this was years and years way back. But they had an open comp, and so I could take my dirt car up. I didn't have to have windshield and all that because it was an open comp. And for whatever reason, they started me on the pole, and I won the race. They were beating on me in the back. They were beating on me and trying to take me out, but being a dirt racer and that sort of stuff, and they knocked me sideways, I could just dirt track out of it, and I took the checkered flag, and I didn't like it. It was on asphalt. It's so uncomfortable. There's so much more centrifugal force. Mm-hmm. I spent half of my effort. Now, keep in mind, it was a dirt car, so it wasn't set up for asphalt as far as hanging in, but I spent half my effort just hanging on because of the centrifugal force in the corner and that sort of stuff. And the other thing, too, is that cars on asphalt have to be so much more perfect than a dirt car.
Oh, yeah. Dirt cars are so forgiving. So forgiving.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if the car doesn't work on the inside, you drive the outside or whatever. Mm. And on asphalt, there's normally one real fast track, and you have to be in it, you know. So I didn't go back. So I'm batting 1,000 on asphalt.
So it sounds to me like you didn't really get into racing as a career. You got into a racing versus golfing.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I was always a racing fan because my dad, when I was young, he helped a racer who was really pretty good, and so I got started going to the races when I was 8, 9 years old. Now, I couldn't get in the pits back in those days, but I'd have to sit in the grandstand by myself and then go in the pits and races or over and that sort of stuff. So I got the bug then, and then later on, out driving on country road and that sort of stuff, I guess I got my experience to start racing by out running a highway patrol. Because I did that during my teenage years. I did that multiple times, never ever got caught. Because get on those, you know, leave the highway. As soon as one took after me, I'd leave the highway and go on the dirt roads. And so I had a little feel for car doing that stuff when I went to racing. My first race, believe it or not, my first race is in Petaluma, California. I was living up in that area in Mill. North of San Francisco.
Whereabouts in North? I'm from Vallejo.
Well, it would be west of Vallejo.
Yeah.
Like, okay. If you drove across San Francisco, after the Golden Gate Bridge, and you went on up through Sausalito.
And Marin County and all that, yeah.
Yeah, Marin County, and then you end up in Petaluma. So it's up there.
Yeah, I love
Petaluma. But my, what I was going to tell you, in my very first race, I came within a fender length of setting a track record. The way that worked was I showed up my very first time, and there again, new guy, doesn't have any points, so put him on the pole. They started me on the pole, and so I'm taking off in this 56 Chevy I just bought, and I'm driving around, and every time I'd come to the corner, I'd, oh, I'm about ready to spin out, and I didn't go down the straightaway and go, oh, I almost. So I did that every time, and then I came around, and there was the white flag, and I said, oh, geez, I'm going to win my first race here. I'm going to slow down a little bit because I'm coming so close to spinning out, and they give me the white flag, I might win the race. And so, well, guess what was going on? The guy that's the points leader, the champion of the track, he started in the back, and so during these laps, he was working his way up, and he got right on my bumper. So when I slowed down, going in the corner, then to make sure I made it around, he got on the inside of me.
Uh-oh.
And now we're going down the backstretch side by side. I'm on the outside, and it was a high bank track with a wall. I said, there's no way in the world this guy that I can drive in on the outside of him and win the race. So since I was been watching racing for years and been around racing, I knew I'm going to do the old Dale Earnhardt crossover, you know. So I hit the brakes first, and then I dove down under him and was coming up on him, and I got within a half a fender length of him, and he won the race and got a new track record.
I'll be darned. Yeah. Hey, can you hang around for another segment?
Sure, I don't have anything else to tell you, though. No more stories.
Oh, I got tons. I'm going to ask you all kinds of questions. We haven't even talked. We haven't even talked about the most important subject, and that's the sponsors that get you to the track.
I don't have any.
That's what I thought. We're going to talk about them anyway, or the ones that could. We'll be right back, folks. Don't go anywhere. We've got JD on the line. I haven't told you how old he is yet. You wait till I tell you that. You're not going to believe it. Hey, this is FM 96.1, AM 1170, The Answer. Folks, welcome back. You're listening to Racer Radio right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170. The Answer. This segment's brought to you by Certified Car Clinic, 11370 North Woodside Avenue in Santee. Go to CertifiedCarCare.net, CertifiedCarCare.net. And if you want to trick out the underhood of your race car with specialty hoses, like those braided fuel lines, water lines, and vacuum lines, well, Certified Car Clinic also houses Hose Specialties. Call them at 619-562-4750. They can custom build all your lines. Trust me, I hate doing it. It always pokes me in the finger. Check them out, hosespecialties.com. Hey, I made J.D. Wilson hang on a little bit because I wanted to chat with him a little bit more. He's a driver up at Paris Auto Speedway, and he's been racing for a few years. Doesn't have any real sponsors, so that means he's just basically doing it probably more for fun. Do you have any kids in the family that like to race?
No, I have one daughter, and she's been around cars her whole life. Matter of fact, she's in advertising, and her what she does, she advertises cars.
There you go.
And she's been around me and been around cars the whole life, so when I go to the races, she is very good. If she goes to the races with me, she's very good help because she knows what goes where and all that sort of stuff. But she has zero interest in driving a car.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there are people that would rather do the media side, the crew chief side, that kind of thing. So do you have a crew?
Carl Tolman is helping me right now.
All right, yeah. So, and that car you're driving, there's not a whole lot of maintenance to it or a lot of work to it unless you wad it up. which is every race.
Well, it doesn't get wadded up because I built a very, very tough car, and so normally don't have to do too much. Mm-hmm. Normally don't do too much to it. No.
Hey, a little bird told me you knocked him out of the park last night at Paris Auto Speedway.
By knocking him out of the park, you mean I won the race?
Yeah, he kind of won the race.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no big deal. Just took first place. That's okay, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So for people that just tuned in because they didn't know you were going to hang on, again, explain to them what type of racing you do.
Well, it's called demo cross, and what it is, we race on a quarter mile track. It's a 20 lap race. What they make it difficult for us. They put obstacles out. They put earth-moving tires on the track, and they put boats on the track, and barrels, 55-gallon barrels of plastic barrels of water on the track, and they water the track just before we start. So it's there's water standing in low places. The track is so wet, and so everybody is. You move at a snail's pace for the first few laps till you kind of get the track worked in a little bit. Everybody's spinning out and that sort of stuff. But also, they encourage you to bump each other, spin each other out to progress forward. So you could hit somebody and knock them off the track, and there wouldn't be a fight afterwards because there's nothing illegal about it.
Interesting. You're driving a Chevelle, probably what, a 65 to 69, something like that?
1970.
Gotcha. I missed
but
it.
But you would never recognize it as a Chevelle going down the street. Not anymore. I mean, on the trailer. Because I've taken the body off of it and I cut the frame and shortened the chassis and then added to the roll cage and put bumpers all the way around it and that sort of stuff. You wouldn't know that it was a Chevelle chassis underneath that.
What color is it?
It's mostly white. Yeah, I got some of the bars and that are red with the red numbers, and then most like the doors are white, and a lot of other part of it's white.
Right. So
racing at night, I want people to be able to see me if I'm sitting there stopped or something.
Yeah, and I think white is would be a perfect color, believe it or not, especially at the nighttime. Yeah. What's your number?
V8. Like if you think of the old 1932 Ford, their emblem was an 8 right on top of a V.
Right.
That's what my number is.
And what was there a reasoning you picked that, or is it just something that you thought was cool?
I just thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I always liked that emblem on the old 32 Ford.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, that makes for a great, heck, if nothing else, you can make a necklace out of it.
and nobody else, other people, if they show up with the same number as somebody else, then they have to put an X on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I don't have that problem.
Yeah, you'll never have that problem with the V8. Now, did you go to any driving schools back in the day, or did you just hard knocks?
Well, I told you that in the last segment. I used to, back in farm country, I used to outrun the highway patrol, and they would take after me. I'd leave the highways and go to the dirt roads and I always outran them and got away from them.
So I guess the answer to that question was no. Well,
yeah.
You were lucky because you and I are pretty close in age, believe it or not. And thank goodness the police radios.
You don't sound like an old guy.
Oh, I know. Well, you don't sound like an old guy either, folks. I'm going to tell you right now, this man is 80 years young. 80 years young. How do you feel after a race, after getting punched around?
Oh, I feel fine after a race. You're all warmed up and that sort of stuff. Yeah, I feel fine. Yeah.
See, that's just because you're just a young soul. That's all.
Yeah.
So, are you getting ready for next season?
No, we have one more race.
And then you're going to get ready for next season because you're going to run next year?
Yeah, I'll run the same car.
Sure, why not?
I build a good enough car to do that. Cause a lot of people, they get the car torn up and they have to pretty much get a new one every year. And this is my fifth year with this car.
Wow. Five. Yeah. Like you said, you can't recognize it as a 70 Chevelle.
No.
But you've been running it 5 years. How'd you do last season?
I finished second in points, won half the races.
No kidding. How are you doing so far this year?
Well, it all depends on where one guy finished last night. One guy, he finished way back. If he finished eighth, I tied him in points because I was behind. There was one race this year. I've got three wins and 2 seconds, but there was one race where I got put in the wall and it broke my steering, so I was dead right there. So all I got was 30 points that night, and so that gave him the points lead. And I was barely chipping away at it, the rest of the races. And then last night I won, so I got 60 points. And I don't know where he finished. We'll find out. If he finished ninth or worse, I'll be ahead. Mm-hmm. If he finished fourth, then he's still the leader.
That is amazing. Well, Scott Delosio sent me some info on you, and he said you led all 20 laps last night. And he said this year in the first seven races, he has 3 wins, 3 second places finishes. The only time he finished out of the top two was when another car crashed him out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Scott seems like he's one of your biggest supporters.
Well, that's not a bad deal, is it?
Heck no. If you get the announcer on your side, come on. What Dale Earnhardt used to say, I don't care what you're saying about me, as long as you're talking about me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got a lot of fans up in the grandstands, and what surprised me is that there's a lot of the parents who bring their little kids, because the little kids want to see that J.D. Wilson.
Yeah.
And they bring them in a pits after the races, and that, you know, and I take pictures with them.
That's so cool. All right, yeah. So here's what you got to do for next season. You got to contact AARP and say, look, you guys got to send me some money so I can put this on the side of my rent. Wouldn't that be a great sponsor for you?
I don't know. I had a sponsor one time, and I always felt obligated, and I just didn't feel it was worth it.
Yeah, but so, AARP would be perfect.
Okay.
Don't you think?
I don't know. When I turned 55, I signed up with AARP, and I did that a year or two, and then I said, well, this is not worth it either.
Thank you very much. But you sure, that's why I'm saying, take their money for us old people that have turned around and made that mistake of signing up. That's how I'm looking at it. Get even with a buddy. I'll have Scott work out a media package for you, and you won't have to pay another dime, and see if we can get all your money back. Well, hey, okay. JD, I got to tell you, dude, this has been an absolute blast. I've really enjoyed talking to you. If you feel like ever calling in again, just let Scott know. I support all the local tracks every Sunday. Uh-huh. I do 5 hours of radio every Sunday. I'm getting ready to do a gun show next. But it's all about supporting the local tracks. Guys like yourself, girls that drive. I mean, you know, I do Paris, Auto Club Speedway, Irwindale, Barona, Cocoa Paw, Ventura. Anybody that wants to call in and talk about their tracks, I'm here for them, and it doesn't cost a dime.
Okay, it sounds good.
All right, buddy. Hey, I'll send this show to Scott. Scott will send it to you, and once you figure out how to work a computer, you'll be able to listen to it.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, buddy. You take care.
Had a good time.
Good. I'm glad you had fun, and thanks for hanging for an extra segment. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Gun Sports Radio, the infamous Carl DeMaio is in the house. He's doing makeup right now. We're almost done with his hair. As soon as we get that all taken care of, you'll be able to hear him on Gun Sports Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170, The Answer.
Who cares about the clouds if we're together?
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
Happy trails to
Racer Radio on AM 1170 The Answer is sponsored by Love Radio Network.